It says in the Megillah, at the end of the Megillah, it says that Mordechai Esther established established the days of Purim, and said, "V'lo yavor," and the days, and it shouldn't pass, shouldn't stop. "V'lo yavor." That's what the end of the Megillah says. So the Baal HaMusa say that "V'lo yavor" refers also that it shouldn't stop. Yeah, that it should go. So the Gemara actually says that Purim is one of the Yom Tovim which is never going to stop, even after the Gula, after Mashiach comes. All the other times, if I cancel besides Purim, "V'lo yavor," it shouldn't stop. But yeah, so that's a good, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So the Baal HaMusa, however, they say "V'lo yavor" means that it shouldn't pass, shouldn't forget about Purim. The inspiration from Purim and the message of Purim, that's something that shouldn't stop, even the subsequent days. We were told. So I want to thank everybody. Thank you very much for the shlachmonas. That was very. Thank you very much. Those of you, I very much appreciate it. But I wanted to share with you two thoughts with regards to. I felt I have to share two thoughts about the ptira of the Sarah Torah Chaim Kanievsky. Those two thoughts that popped in my mind, and I wanted to share that with you. One is, I used to write letters to Reb Chaim Kanievsky in the days that he still answered all the letters. You know, apparently there's 300, I don't know if that's true. I don't know if the figure is correct, but apparently he answered 300,000 letters in 300,000 tshuvas. Sounds, I don't know if it's true or not. Go and check. But so anyway, I was one of the many who bothered him and disturbed him with writing letters. And one observation which I made is the following. That I want to emphasize two letters which I got from him. One of them is when we learned something in great detail in Kol, we spent not hours and not days but weeks on a contradiction on a sugya in halacha, a very deep contradiction and a very complicated sugya. And then we decided at the end we're going to ask Reb Chaim Kanievsky. There's two different approaches how to tackle it. Is, you know, what's the exception? What's the rule? Etc. Two different. So I said, you know what? I'm going to ask Reb Chaim Kanievsky this question just out of interest. So I sent him because you could see it all the way down to Mishnah Berurah, whatever. I thought it's a good idea to ask Reb Chaim Kanievsky. I sent him the letter. He's going back. I just checked before it was around 2005, 2007, about those years. So I sent him a letter, and as always, Reb Chaim Kanievsky would answer, you know, with 3-4 words. Although I've got one of his letters, which is a few lines, but generally, his letters were always, his tshuvas were always known to be containing a couple of letters, most of them abbreviations, and literally a couple of words. And it's unbelievable, when I received that letter, and we discussed it in Kollel, it was unbelievable in such short, nearly... It's unbelievable with those few words. How much was in there? It was all mahalach. It was all approach, and it was what we had been discussing for literally weeks in Kollel. He had condensed in literally words in an absolute consistent, a gewaltige, incredibly deep approach. Literally in a few words, and either it's unreal intelligence, which is. You know, probably true as well, like incredible, in condensed few words, how he could, or, which is probably also true, unbelievable Siyat Ishmael, how he could just get the right words down. And it's easy in a way to write the whole, you know, like a whole essay and words and 200, 300 words. It's, you know, but to have it condensed in such few words and to have it so sharp and so correct, it's absolutely unbelievable. I've never seen anything like that. It's unbelievable. That's one thing which I saw with my own eyes. I've got that letter at home. It's unbelievable. And then some... Pardon? No, in my days, no, there was no. This was the years before that. After in later years, there was somebody that donated it. Somebody had wanted to have the schos of Habotzlav Reb Chaim Kanievsky. So it was famously somebody, I don't know who it was, who had, it was on his, as he had all these envelopes that were prepaid envelopes. And then he would, all the replies would come with the prepaid envelopes. Although it's interesting, the answers were written, I think, Reb Chaim didn't answer the answers written by Reb Chaim, but the address, I think it was written by either his wife or by his daughter, but it's a different handwriting. But I've got quite a lot of, I just showed it now to my kids at home, quite a lot of letters of Reb Chaim. But the other Reb Chaim, which I found is also exceptional, is that I, stupidly enough, I asked him twice the same question. Difference being, it was about 15 years in between. Yeah? No. But what's, I think what's even more unbelievable... No, nearly. But I think which is more impressive is that the response is absolutely identical. And, you know, there's many ways you could answer a question, and there's many ways, and it was absolutely identical, which just shows an incredible consistency. You know, we're 15 years apart, and you write the same answer to, it's a question on a Pialoch in Simon Tov Pet and Sfilas HaOmer. And a question, like a kind of a question from a Gemara on a Bialocha, and I asked him with a good distance apart, and the response was identical with those many years apart. I think it's incredible. It's incredible because we know how we speak and how we write and how we, you know, forever, and nobody takes responsibility of his words, and nobody takes responsibility of what they say, what they write, what they do. And he has got absolute sharp consistency, so many years apart, with such clarity. It's absolutely amazing. I think it's absolutely amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I think it's... So that's something else. But besides the Gaon isn't...
I tell you what, you persuade me now to vaccinate my 7-year-old son. Because Rabbi Kadesh said you should vaccinate from 5 years old. So you now, you persuade me to vaccinate all my family, my children...
Okay, I can't comment on that. I can't comment on that. But what I can say, and I want to finish off with that, talking about Reb Chaim, but I want to share another perspective, which I've been thinking about a lot since yesterday. And that's the Avos Yisrael of Reb Chaim. And it's not obvious, but I think it's very, very true. When we talk about Avos Yisrael of a person, we generally have a certain picture of Avos Yisrael. And what does a person look like who has got real Avos Yisrael? We've got a certain picture. And in some way, Reb Chaim doesn't particularly fit in that category. And I think it's really false, because I think his Avos Yisrael is absolutely incredible. Why? Because as follows. If anybody has ever been zoche to go to Reb Chaim, and I was just before COVID, I went with my son, went to Eretz Yisrael for, you probably remember when I cancelled Shir for a week or whatever. So just before COVID, literally 2 and a bit years ago, and I went to Reb Chaim, I got into Reb Chaim, I got my buas, and we had a bit of a thing there. It was very, very nice. But what is incredible is that whoever's ever seen Reb Chaim, has been to Reb Chaim, would feel and sense that Reb Chaim was not the person that would seek that VIP status. There was nothing that he hated more than being out there. All he wanted, anybody could sense that, was just to sit and learn. And do his own things. He wasn't interested in being exposed to the world. He wasn't exposed to being a leader and a guider and a God. That's not what he wanted to do. He wanted to simply sit and learn. And yet, the Mishnah always tells us, covered, you know, the covered escapes from him. Whatever doesn't see covered, the covered just runs after him. And that's Reb Chaim. He wasn't interested in that. He really, really wasn't interested. He wanted to sit and learn. And yet, Klal Yisrael needed him. But the fact that he was allowing himself to be asked all those questions, and the fact he allowed himself to be that person who would do all these decisions and be the one out there to make all those guiding decisions and hanog and all that was pure, real Avos Yisrael, because that's not what he wanted to do. That was a veto. Now, it's not the normal veto, it's kind of most people want to be the one in charge, and he would seek that, he would want that. Him, on the contrary, he didn't want that. But that is real veto, because he didn't want that. He wasn't interested in that. All he wanted was to sit and learn Torah Yemon Valaylo. And the fact that he allowed himself to be that is real avos, because he did it for the klal. He understood the klal needs it. And I think that's really quite incredible. That's a bimavata for others in its purest sense. זכוס יגן עלינו, תנשמוס עצור בצור החיים. זכוס ובחיים, זה חצד וקודש לברוכם. Yeah, I think that all the letters I've got are from Reb Chaim, yeah. In those years, I stopped writing after a certain point. I heard that in his very, very last years, he stopped writing, I don't know how many years ago. And a few years before that, he didn't write himself, there was somebody else who'd write on his behalf. But the ones that I've got are clearly his own handwriting, for sure.
He does WhatsApp now. His son-in-law,
really?
Does WhatsApp,
yeah. Really?
If you want to know if your name's kosher or not, send it to his...
Really? I never heard of that. Yeah, okay, so the mice, that's also something that he did it. The reason why he answered those questions, many of them are repetitions and some of them stupid questions and And he just felt that he didn't feel that he would be the right. He didn't enjoy giving shir. Didn't enjoy giving going in yeshiva or in kol. So he felt that's the way he can be ma'abed Torah. Yeah, because his father told him to do so. Yeah. You went to a prime? I'm sure you must have gone to a prime. Yeah. You went to a prime, yes. Yeah. Okay. Rabbi Yisrael to Simon Lamed Base, save off. I want to do very, very quickly. And then I want to primarily go through Simon Siv Lamed Vav, just literally go through it with a basic concept, and then after go more into Simon Lamed Siv Lamed Zayin and etc. Okay, so Siv Lamed Vav is really in Simon Lamed Siv Lamed Vav is going to tell us a little bit about Parshas Stumois and Psuchois. So what it's really referring to is actually much more relevant to Sefer Torah. And in Sefer Torah we've got there is Halacha L'Mishmi Sinai, which Parsha is Astumis and Psucha is Parsha. In this context over here is not what we call a Parsha, like Bereishis, Noach, Lech Lecha. It's not that kind of Parsha. Parsha means, yeah, exactly, that's what it is. Parsha means what we would probably call, a paragraph or perhaps even a chapter, pardon? Not a sentence, no, it's more than that. It's a kind of collect. No, it's not it's not in line with the Pokim. There isn't actually talking about Pokim. I'll just mention there is a strong case to argue that Pokim are probably not of a Jewish source in the first place. The Pokim are probably come the first source of that. Probably the Pokim probably come from Gentile sources and from the Middle Ages, and it somehow got into our system. But it's probably not Yiddish thing. That's why in the Yiddish world it is very common to call the Pokim. We call them generally? No. How do you call a perek normally? In the Yiddish world, you often see people. No. They capital. They call it capital. Why do you call it capital, which is the Yiddish or the German expression as opposed to perek? Because you want to emphasize, since the Minogim and Klal Yisrael are so well founded, you want to emphasize that it's not actually a Jewish thing. So you don't say perek. Perek, it means like, it's like from the tradition, from the Messiah. And the capital, you're saying that it's actually not. So it comes that there is strong evidence to say that the Pokim that we have is not from, are not from Yiddish Makos. That's the difficulty. So, so that's the question. That's probably why. So you would just say beginning or end of the Pasha, mid Pasha, or you'd say, in terms of Chumash? Yeah, Sedus. You just go with the Sedus. Yeah, it's very difficult. Yeah, so you've got to be well more. You had the difficulty. Yeah, but the point, that's why it got into the system. But it really has very little because there is. I saw recently, just a few months ago, I saw that there is some who want to say this halacha mishmi Sinai. I saw some, but it's not likely to be. I'm saying it's hard to understand. The pashtos is that kapitlach come from Gosha sources. The same thing with the kapitlach and tehillim. Same thing. It's probably, it doesn't come from the psukim. The fact that the vision of our psukim are for sure, we've got Messiah for that. But the kapitlach are probably, and you can sometimes see in Chumash that the way it's split doesn't make any sense. You can sometimes see that it doesn't make any sense the way the chapter, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. I'm not saying it never makes sense, but I can see sometimes, you can see in the Chumash, that the way the kapitlach are divided make little sense, are not based on Messiah. Okay, so that's in terms of, so the parsha we're talking about are the paragraphs according to the Messiah. Some are stumois and some are psuchois, which means the way they are split are either longer paragraphs, shorter paragraphs. Yes, the kol piyashis, say psuchois, all the parshas should be done psuchois. Chutz mipasha achrona ksuva b'toira, she voim shemoi shesenu stumo. See, we've got the instruction that the voim shemoi should be done stumo. Veim shino apostle, if you make the pashois in the Torah, you fail to make them a separation of stumo or psucho, meaning you just go on from pasuk to pasuk without making any separation, that sefer Torah or that tefillin would be pasul. Veish machshirim mekulam. Some say that if you do them psuchos as opposed to stumos, that would be okay. For medina is elu noagim af parshas im shemaya beroish hashita kesha parshas. You should know, says the Rama, if you're the best way to do it, and that's indeed how we're doing it by the tefillin, you should always start the parshas of the tefillin with the top. So vayim shemaya starts on the top line at the beginning. and thereby you're avoiding all the problems. You start the beginning of the top line. That's the way to do it. The way to make a Parshas Tumah is by leaving a gap of tes oisyois, 9 letters. That's the gap that is required. And the Shema, you don't leave a space. Okay, that's guidance for Sofrim, the way they should write the Pashas. Siv Lamed Zayim. Oir HaBatim. We are now discussing the oir, the leather of the batim. Tzorich Liois, there must be. So now we're talking about the batim, the material, the way the batim are created. So now we're moving on from the pashas. We're now not discussing the klaf, the pash, anymore. Now we're discussing the batim. The oira batim, the leather, the material of the batim, tzorich liois must be ma'oir from leather, from hide, from skin, behema, chaya v'oif. From behema, chaya v'oif, from an animal, which is a behema, in toire chaya, which is what we call the wild animal, v'oif, or even a bird, toirim, there must be toir, v'afilum in avela, even if it's an avela, meaning that it's not slaughtered, it's not kosher, oi trefa, shalahem, so you can have a behema, chaya v'oif, which is kosher in principle, but this particular behema has not been shechted, v'rashay laso is miklaf, you can do it from klaf, so it can be from the skin, that's fine. Oir me'oir shlil, or you can even use the oir, the leather, from a shlil, from an unborn baby animal, which is much softer. You can still use that. V'chein ha'retzuiz, similarly the retzuiz, yochel ha'asoiz miklaf, v'oir shlil. You can make them also from, the retzuiz also you can make from an unborn kosher animal. It should be processed lishmoy. If it's possible, Rabbi said there's a bit of history here because there's a change. I think I may have mentioned that previously. What are our batim made out of? Our batim now, yeah. They're made out of what is considered in the poskim gasois. They are what we call gasses, big animals. And they are, therefore the skin is much thicker, and therefore much more solid, and therefore much better. Previously, until fairly recently, we're going back to this, our contemporary century, the tefillin were made out of dakois, much thinner skin animal, because it simply did not have the way to process it, to produce it, to create a tefillin of that. So therefore, there's no question about it that our tefillin nowadays are far superior quality than our great-grandfather's tefillin. There's no question about it. If you have ever seen, and I have, seen tefillin, batim, of previous generation of 100 years ago, they are soft, not like pudding. But they are soft. You can literally shape them with your hands. Literally, you can shape them, and there's no chiddush therefore, no surprise therefore, that it often became possible. Why did it become possible if they are so soft? They get damaged and not square. They got to be square. We're going to speak about that soon. They got to be square, and they cannot stay square if they are soft, because obviously and they get damaged. And they're much more vulnerable to any to changes from weather, from moisture, etc. And you could see they were very, very, very vulnerable and very soft. Our tefillin are much better.
What's the chashivus of having old tefillin?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the question asked is, what's the chashivus of having very old? So if they are kosher, then it's good. You're right, it's very rare to find ancient tefillin which are on a halakhically good quality. It is well known. You're just reminding me of a story. I want to tell you a story, Rabbi Isai. We're talking about Reb Chaim Kanevsky and talking about his father-in-law, Yishver, Rav Eliashiv. Now, Rav Eliashiv, the story goes, I heard this years ago from a batimacher in Yerushalayim. He told me the following story, Rabbi Isai. It's funny you're reminding me the story now. There was a very Rav Eliashiv's grandfather was called the Leshem. Rabbi Eliashiv's grandfather, Leshem. Leshem was called Avraham Eliashiv. He was actually not Rabbi Eliashiv's father's father. He was his mother's father, but Rabbi Eliashiv kept his name. His mother, he had his mother's name, family name. The Leshem. The Leshem was a very great Mekubal. Avraham Eliashiv was a very great Mekubal, his grandfather, Rabbi Eliashiv. Now, the Leshem, he had tefillin from the rarest, most superior tefillin of those days, which was a Minsan HaSoifas tefillin. They were considered the most spectacular, unique tefillin. It was a person that was incredibly holy, and he was a tefillin. His tefillin were incredible. And the Leshem owned tefillin. He had tefillin, they were very rare, which were written by a Minsan HaSoifas. Now, the story goes that Rav Eliashiv Yashant inherited tefillin from his grandfather. No, but obviously those tefillin were tefillin, which were? I wouldn't say those words, but they were dakos. They were made out of the previous kind style. And Rav Eliashiv, you know what it means to wear tefillin of the Leshem? Of the Leshem of the God Adoy? You know what it means to have tefillin which were made by Masal Sefer? Apparently they were going for $50,000 or something. Unbelievable. And Rav Eliashiv decided when he saw there were takas and everything, he didn't like the ribua so much, he decided to skip them and bought himself brand new tefillin. So there you go. Maybe it did. I don't know. Take out the pashas. Yeah, it could be it did. I don't know. But he wasn't impressed by the fact that it was his great grandfather's and it was his grandfather, Leshem, and he wasn't impressed by the fact that it was himself. If halachically, it's not perfect, so fine, I'm next, I'm moving on, I'm going to somebody else's. I'm buying new tefillin, which I'm moving, because halachically, it's better. So that's your answer. According to Rav Eliashiv, that's the story I heard then, a few years ago. So that's the thing. But I agree that there are some people who are very emotional and very thing about wearing old tefillin, but that's the story with Rav Eliashiv. How much would you pay to get to wear to have Rav Eliashiv's tefillin? I don't know. That's pretty well. I know. How much would you be prepared to pay money to get Rav Eliashiv's tefillin? Yeah. Okay. So I say here we learned that they must be from kosher animals, and the reason is Sifkot and Kuf Samach Vav. Why is it that you got to have kosher animals for the batim? It must be something which is permitted to your mouth. It's got to be mina muta beficha, something which is permitted to something permitted that would in principle be permitted to eat. The kim the oshin shu merameis al shem shakai nikmat ba'or tefillin who bichlal teiras Hashem. It's considered teiras Hashem. Why is it the batim called teiras Hashem? Says the Mishnah. Very interesting. Why is the batim called teiras Hashem? Because you've got a shin in the tefillin on the side, and that shin is name of Hashem, Shakai. So you've got Teiras Hashem on the tefillin. Therefore, it represents Teiras Hashem. Therefore, it's got to be mina muta beficha. Ve'u bichol Teiras Hashem. Ve'in chilek benash shel rosh shel nashiyat. Yeah. It's got to be lishmo if possible. Finally, Sif Lamed Ches for tonight. Yase dalet batim me'oir echot. You should do the four batim mo'ir echad from one skin, from one piece. The shel rosh for the shel rosh uveis echad the shel yad and one bais the shel of the shel yad. Okay, Rabbi, so we're going to stop over here for this evening. Okay, Rabbi, so we should very, very good evening.